Now on BBC Radio 4, Comic Fringes, the first of five short stories from this year's Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Today's story was recorded earlier at the Pleasance Cabaret Bar and involves a woman with a passion for punctuation. Gayanne Potter reads Melons 69p by Laurie Don.
The first time, it was not premeditated. She was squatting on the pavement, retying her lace, not kneeling as the pavement was dirty and damp, but crouching with one foot flexed under her and the other balancing on its heel. There it was, right in front of her, inches away. Melon, 69p. She just licked her finger and smudged it off. Melons, 69p. She glanced furtively around her. No one in the shop doorway or on the pavement had noticed. She stood up faster than was good for her balance, tried to look inconspicuous, and strode off, forgetting momentarily her intention to buy green beans. She was shocked at her own impertinence. Her finger had snaked out and removed the offending squiggle before her brain had even started down the familiar track of possessive or contraction, not plural. It hadn't been planned. It hadn't even been conscious. But now it felt liberating. She walked home without any vegetables for lunch, but with a renewed sense of intellectual purpose. There was one fewer offender in the blizzard of unnecessary apostrophes blighting the small shopfronts of Edinburgh. She was a punctuation pirate, a linguistic outlaw, a campaigner for clarity, a reaver of rogue apostrophes, a fruit shop fugitive. She stopped playing with this list when she realised she was mouthing softly to herself and attracting looks from passers-by. The next few times she passed along Great Junction Street, she looked furtively at the chalkboard outside the fruit shop. The melons were no longer headline news. New potato, ntz. Vine tomato, ntz. And herb, ntz, all flaunted their apostrophes at her. Could she brazenly stoop down again and remove the offending mark? What had been so easily done once, without thought, was much harder to do when she had to plan it. If she had a toddler with her, she could bend down beside it and use a spat-on hanky to clean its face and just wipe off the apostrophe at the same time. She was walking more stiffly and more slowly past the shop, conscious of the number of shoppers, shop assistants, and delivery men surrounding her, all of whom could pounce if she attacked the sign. Why was this one sign annoying her so much? After all, for years she had railed silently against the gathering hordes of misplaced apostrophes. Did people think that every word ending in S needed an apostrophe? Like a Q needs a U? She had also been irritated at the profusion of capital letters appearing in the middle of sentences. Had the Germans won the war? She even walked along Great Junction Street one evening just before her bedtime, wondering if the shopkeeper left his sign out at night, and if there would be a chance, under cover of darkness, to correct the sign just the once more to put her mind at rest. However, the street was almost as bright and busy as day, with pubs and fish and chip shops and off licences. There was no privacy to make corrections, nor indeed had the shopkeeper left the sign out on the pavement. For fear of vandals or thieves, she supposed. Then she realised with a start that she had planned to vandalise it, to steal his apostrophe. It may be unnecessary to her, but to him it was a piece of chalk, a piece of time, and indeed a necessary piece of the word melons. She didn't sleep when she got home after her abortive night raid. She was examining her motives, worried now that a single incident, a satisfying yet scary change from her routine, a moment of silent madness, was starting to dominate her life. She had found she couldn't walk past that fruit shop without being drawn to the sign. She was glancing round at people to see if they were looking at her, judging to see if she had the seconds she would need to win another temporary victory against the misuse of language. She had been finding herself drawn during the day to more streets filled with small grocers and scruffy charity shops, looking for bad grammar, spelling mistakes, unreadable layouts. She was torn between pleasurable wincing at a new twist of stupidity and a cosy feeling of superiority over the ignorant. Yet, if it was ignorance she was trying to erase, rather than one tiny apostrophe, why didn't she beard the lion in its den? Explain to the perpetrator his minor yet significant crime. Offer him a free and friendly lesson in grammar and usage. The idea of an honest approach, rather than all this sneaking about at ungodly hours, appealed to her, and with a glow of righteousness, she finally drifted off to sleep. The next morning, she dressed carefully. Not too prim, like some deranged Victorian schoolmistress, nor in khaki, like some urban terrorist. She tried very hard to dress casually, like an ordinary shopper who had just popped into a shop with a comment about apostrophes. How did she normally dress to get her messages? Jeans and t-shirt, leggings and jumper, long cotton skirt and vest. When she thought about it, they all seemed contrived. Eventually, she decided to wear exactly what she had been wearing the previous week when she erased the apostrophe. Just as if she had nipped in that day rather than taking 10 days to come up with the idea and steel herself to carry it through. So, a big baggy jacket, a pair of formal office trousers, and ankle boots. No hat. Hats, however hard they try, can't be inconspicuous. They always make a statement. She intended to have toast for breakfast, but misjudged the second shot in the toaster, the one to get it just right, and burned it slightly. She put it on her plate, considered buttering it anyway, but she knew she would never eat it. So instead, she picked it up, scrunched it like warm tissue paper in one fist, and threw it onto the lino. Staring at the black and brown crumbs, she thought, I'm in no state to explain the intricacies of the English language to an unwilling audience today. Nevertheless, she picked up her keys and her wallet and marched out of the door. Her wallet was pretty light, prompting a tactical question. Should she buy something and introduce the subject of grammar naturally into the conversation? But there never was conversation, only an exchange of information. That's £1.12. There you are. Bag. No thanks. Thank you. Thank you. So should she just walk in and say, excuse me, but... And then what? Should she wait until the shop was empty to avoid humiliating him? Or herself? Or should she seek safety and indeed confirmation of her case in a group of customers? It suddenly seemed a long way to her local shop. She practiced a simple explanation in her head. You only need an apostrophe for two cases, the genitive or possessive, like John's car, formerly John his car, or carriage perhaps, but don't worry about that. Or a missing letter or letters like it is becoming it's, but not when it is in possession like its headlights. But don't worry about that. You don't need apostrophes for plurals or for other words ending in s. Now, as the melons don't actually own the 69p, nor have you shortened the word to fit on the sign, you don't need an apostrophe. In fact, as all you are likely to be doing is putting a noun and a number on your wee board, you probably don't ever need apostrophes. Just don't use them. Just stop worrying about them. Perhaps she should stop worrying about them herself. What was she doing? There are so many more important things in the world, she told herself. But clear communication was the basis of human relationships, and ambiguity was its enemy. Apostrophes are there to clarify. Anyway, it was annoying her and making her lose sleep, and all she wanted to do was tell the bloke in a friendly way that he was abusing the English language and breaking rules made by better men than himself. And there would be an end to it. She stopped short of the fruit shop. The sign read, special offer today. Garlic, 49p a pound. She started walking. Deflated. Relieved. Cheated. She walked around Leith Walk, Easter Road and Duke Street for a while, looking intently at shop windows, pavement A-boards, stenciled Ford vans. She counted under her breath 34 unnecessary apostrophes, 27 misplaced capital letters and half a dozen words or phrases in quotation marks for no good reason. One of the few shops with no grammatical errors in its advertising was a small office supply shop. She entered and spent her few remaining pounds on some Tippex, a black felt tip, a small pot of red paint and a wee brush. Scarcely admitting to herself what she intended to do, she stepped back out onto the street. And there, across the road, was the best example yet. Charles and Son, baking since 1936. She laughed out loud with joy and wonder. It was a professional shop front. Bright yellow background and an elegant dark green script. The shop had paid someone to make this and to fix it above their door and window. Why had no one noticed? Why had no one said? It was a gift. A sign from whatever lay above or below. She looked round for a ladder. Well, expecting there to be one to hand just because she needed it and the situation was so right. She would have to improvise. She crossed the road diagonally, heading for the clearance shop two doors down from the bakery, where she picked up a middling-sized gate-leg table and a spindly dining chair. She turned and, without looking back, carried them awkwardly but quickly to the baker's. She opened up the gate-leg, placed the chair firmly in the centre and clambered up using the shop's window ledge. It was a low shop front, added onto the older building behind, so she could now reach the sign by stretching. From her pocket, she got the brush and the paint. After a dicey moment using the pointed brush handle to prise open the paint lid, she did not hesitate. A bold stroke of red through the whole word, Charles, then rewriting it in smaller but clearer letters underneath. Charles. She hadn't heard a thing while engaged in the exercise. No buses or children or mobile phones. But now that she had corrected the sign, the full sounds of city life crashed in again, overlaid with some new shouting. She turned to get down. Balancing carefully, she descended, but only achieved the stability of the window ledge and the pavement at the cost of knocking the chair to the ground. She turned to the loud woman in the apron. You didn't need the apostrophe. They were both silent for a moment. She righted the chair and set off down the road, smiling briefly at the man in the door of the furniture shop. Past the next bus stop, she paused outside a newsagent and used Tippex to alter an A4 sign reading. We sell all types of phone card. She walked on.
Gayanne Potter was reading Melons 69p by Laurie Dunn. The producer was David Jackson Young, and there's another short story from the Pleasance Cabaret Bar in Edinburgh tomorrow afternoon at 3:30.